You look like your head fell on the cheese dip back in 1957. You're okay. This one, real fucking ugly. Oh. You see, I take these glasses off. She looks like a regular person, doesn't she, huh? Put them back on, formaldehyde face. That's what we got.
That's enough out of you. You get out or I call the cops.
Call the cops? You know what you need? You need a Brazilian plastic surgeon.
I've got one that can see.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Citizen Frame. I got some sad news. We actually recorded the full Monty, which we said we would be doing for this week's podcast, and we did so. Unfortunately, there was a technical glitch. I would obviously blame Trevor, but it was not his fault. It was my own. I have a new mic here, and something just didn't record right. Now we go back and re-record. But the one thing about our podcast, besides being prepped with some notes and you know, some information about the film and stuff, we kind of just go with, the flow. The only editing we do is sound issues and so forth, because we don't, if we re-recorded it, it wouldn't be as spontaneous and it just come up formulaic and
it wouldn't be the same podcast.
Yeah. It wouldn't be what we usually do, because anytime we fuck up stuff, which is usually me, we like to keep it in there just because, fuck it, it's just the way the conversation flew. Flowed.
Keeps it more natural.
See? Flow. I screw that up, but I won't edit it. See?
Yeah.
But we will do the full Monty again. But we're just going to let it marinate for a while and redo it maybe in the end of the summer. But
we're
in the meantime,
we're going to put our clothes back on for a while. You'll be glad to hear. And then we'll do it again.
That was terrible, dude.
I know. Bad joke.
Wow. That was... Wow, I apologize. You know what? I'm not going to edit that.
Don't.
I want people to know what I have to deal with on a daily basis. But yeah, so we will get to it. So we had to quickly get one in a little more prepared for, one that we knew, and we decided to go back to what you guys have been asking us to do for a while, and I don't know why we took so long to get to it. It is outside the box of the gritty crime drama we've been doing, but it's definitely a pleasant one to do, and that is looking at John Carpenter's 1988 cult smash, well, cult hit now, which is They Live.
Yep.
Yeah. Life's a bitch, and she's back in heat.
There's actually a lot of quotable one-liners in this. Obviously, the one about, you know, I'm here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, you know, but there's quite a few others.
Yeah, there's quite a bit. Most of it's improv by Roddy Piper himself.
Yes.
So They Live. This is co-produced by longtime producer and assistant director to John Carpenter, Larry Franco. It was written by John Carpenter. However, it's based on the science fiction short story. It is a man by the, it was written by a man named Ray Nelson. It was called 8 a.m. in the Morning. So there you go.
Yep. I must be honest and say that I haven't read the short story, but it is one that I would like to, you know.
Yeah, he's written quite a bit, but film-wise, or something that was inspired by his work, this would be the only one.
Well, this very much plays out like an old sort of pulp sci-fi story anyway, an extended one, even an episode of The Twilight Zone or Outer Limits or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the short story itself was written in 1963, around that, you know, that era, and it is about a man named George Nada. He wakes up to find that there is a great secret being kept from the world, and he's the only human to have found out the truth. Obviously, this story obviously expands on that, John Carpenter's version, but we'll dive into it. This cost $4 million to make. John Carpenter's stuff has always been lower budget and has always profited. It made $14 million. Not a massive profit. It wasn't a big hit, but it was a massive critical hit. And, of course, like most of Carpenter's stuff, massive resurgence on video format. And, again, like most Carpenter's stuff, it's a cult hit.
Yeah, I mean, I first saw it on video, like so many of the films we review on here and that I watched as a kid. I would have watched them first on video. And, you know, this is one of them. And, yeah, the thing I love about Carpenter and his films is that essentially, and I don't I mean this in the best possible way, they're B-movies, but they're just greatly entertaining and they most definitely deserve to be cult classics, which so many of them are.
I mean, you can describe his vision as a B-movie. I would describe more as Carpenter as an A-list director with B-movie intentions.
Yep. He doesn't sell out, and he's never sold out.
Yeah, so he could go play with the big boys, but he's always been a little more grounded. It kind of sounds like he's been screwed over a bit with some of his films not being hits. Like, for instance, he wanted to do a couple films, but he couldn't do them for certain reasons. The Thing bombed on him, and that didn't help. Who knew The Thing would be his crowning success?
Yes.
But that was then. So he kind of stepped away. I really think he's just stepped away from Hollywood. Not because he didn't want to keep filmmaking. I think people weren't understanding his style when it tweaked into the 90s with movies like Vampires, Ghost of Mars, even the new Escape from LA.
Yeah.
For some reason, his B kind of visionary didn't translate well as the 90s became a darker toned era. So I think that's what happened to Carpenter.
But then as time has went on, they've increased in popularity again. It's like, you know, peaks and troughs, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas in the 90s, yeah, he wasn't as popular, perhaps, but then his popularity has increased.
Oh, John Carpenter never went away.
No, he never went away, but he's
his stuff is all cult status. I mean, everything he's done.
Everyone, but I love that.
You know, and so he's found his, I mean, he's pretty much retired from filmmaking now, but yeah, I mean, his stuff is longevity. His stuff you can watch over and over again, even his later work.
Great stories.
As silly as Ghost of Mars is, it's got rewatchability. As cheesy it is, and Vampires. Vampires has actually found a big following, and that's very good. And James Woods is so fun in that movie as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, like I say, he's never sold out and he's always stuck to what he obviously enjoys and where he feels most at home at. He's never went for big budget mainstream and you know what? Good on him.
I did go big budget once. And unfortunately, it was a failure. But rumor has it was because of Chevy Chase. It was very difficult to work with.
Partly he is very difficult to work with.
Yeah, I don't know what happened on set, so I won't, you know, go after Chevy Chase or anything. But Carpenter always works with the same team. Usually he works with Universal. He has a good relationship with all the people he works with. So when you put a little tension on the set, he probably just wasn't uncomfortable with it, maybe. But rumor has it, Sam Neill was very cool on the set. This movie's called Memoirs of a Visible Man.
Yes.
Actually a very clever film for its time. Would like to revisit it again, but it's definitely the one where Carpenter decided just to go back to what works for him. And then I believe he jumped in Mouth of Madness, going back to more ground and working with Sam Neill again.
Yes. And which we covered on this podcast.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Because it's John fucking Carpenter. John Carpenter is, if not my favorite director of all time. So, but everyone knows that.
All right. He would certainly be up there with myself.
So we got Roddy Piper, the man with no name. He does not have a name, this character, but in the credits, the King Carpenter just gave him one. He's called Nada. He's just named after the last name of George Nada, who was featured in the original short story. And then you've got our boy from The Thing, Keith David, who I've always liked to see in films, plays Frank.
Totally.
Meg Foster, I can't act at all, but she's something about her. Her plays Holly. Peter Jason is always fun to watch. He's Gilbert. And then you got George Buckflower, the Drifter. Now, George Buckflower has a smaller part in the beginning, but we'll get to it. He has a bigger part near the end. But the reason I mention him is because he's in all the Carpenter stuff.
He also plays another homeless guy in Back to the Future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. But George Buckflower just passed away just recently, but you'll know him from all the, you'll see his face, you'll know right away Carpenter. He's got that raspy voice, and he's always been the one. He's got my favorite line in Carpenter's The Fog. He's the fisherman who says, "There's no fog bank out there." See the movie, you'll get what I'm talking about. But so it's nice to see him.
I haven't seen The Fog in years. I'm going to have to revisit it.
Fog is, I watch The Fog. Yeah,
so, no, it's brilliant. Oh.
Once every couple of months, if not more. It's such a fucking great.
I remember, you know, really enjoying it as a kid. Find it really spooky.
So the film itself is, I don't know how to go with it really. See, you brought in Roddy Piper. In the 80s, you had all these wrestlers, like now, where you've got UFC people and wrestlers like The Rock, John Cena, Batista, yep, who really finding their niche and doing well, and they deserve it. Kudos. In the 80s, they tried to do that. Didn't really translate as well. Roddy Piper, I think Andre the Giant was a wrestler, but he did The Princess Bride. And then you had Hulk Hogan, obviously Rocky III at the time. So you have these wrestlers now doing their transition into acting, which actually I could see because, especially for the action film, because people don't realize this, most of them do actually, that a wrestler is an actor because everything they do is staged. But it's
performance.
It's staged very well. I mean, these guys are pretty much stunt workers.
Totally.
So it does make sense. And I will say, Roddy Piper, not the greatest actor of all time, but man, no. Is he likable. And that's what get with most of these guys who hit the screen. Just like Schwarzenegger and Van Damme, there's a presence there that you just like.
Yeah, I agree. You know, he is totally likable, but let's just say his performance, certainly in this, isn't exactly nuanced, and he doesn't have a great dramatic range. But you know what? We're not watching this for sort of heavy acting chops.
You can hear Carpenter's style in his music.
Yes.
He teams up with his buddy Alan Howa for this score, and they play this din, 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 like this Ennio Morricone score.
Yeah,
from
like
the
Western type.
Yeah, as he's coming into town, here comes this drifter, the man with no name, technically.
Stranger comes to town.
Yeah, so, and that's what they're playing with. I know Carpenter so well that everything he does is based usually on, you can just see it, whether it's High
Stern or something.
Rio Bravo or High Noon. I mean, this even has a very Magnificent Seven feel. Yeah, there's two of them, but it's pretty much a one-way trip.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
concerning the acting. Keith David definitely sort of carries it very much. Certainly, well, at very least in the scenes that he's in, of course, you know, he can act.
Yeah. And then you've also got Peter Jason who plays Gilbert. He's worked with Carpenter.
Holly's just, what do you call it? She appears alien just anyway. You know, she's like an alien clone of, Vision of the Body Snatchers version of Kirstie Alley.
Yeah. She's got those fucking eyes.
Yeah, it's weird. It's alien-like, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I like the opening shot when Roddy comes into town, and right off from the bat, the great thing about Carpenter is that we're about to watch hokey, cheesy fun. But at the same time, there's a really good story here.
It's clever. It's a satire.
Yes. And so he knows how to pepper in little moments. And it happens in the beginning here where it's about consumerism and how much we are easily hypnotized or the subliminal messaging that comes through the TV. When Roddy Piper walks into town, there's a man just sitting there glued through a storefront TV.
Yeah.
And he's not moving. His eyes aren't, he's not blinking. He's just memorized. And all it is an advertisement of some sort that's on the TV.
And even as well, whenever, before he sort of goes to the sort of shanty town, whenever he first sort of sleeps rough at the start, one of the other homeless guys, it's basically watching a TV as well through somebody else's window.
Yeah. And then you have, let me ask you this though. When he goes to the homeless place.
Yes.
There's a blind preacher there.
Yes.
And he's mimicking or he's lip syncing to the words that this evangelist
yes.
on the TV. How is he doing yes. that? Is that because he wrote them?
Because he's that's again the one talking on the TV is whenever the transmissions break through.
Yes.
You know, from the basically, for want of a better phrase, the rebels.
Yes.
Well, I think it's probably because he's heard that recording. That's a recording. I think he's heard it before. Because don't forget, he's part
okay.
of the.
Okay. Okay. I thought it was live.
Revolutionary gang who know the score about the aliens. I think, I mean, it's not fully explained, but I can only assume it's maybe because it's a recording and he's heard it several times before. It was probably there when it was recorded even.
Okay. Okay. And the story's pretty quick. All we have is pretty simplified right away when Gilbert tells, they have this meeting and yes. you find out that all they have to do is to shut the signal down. It's so simple. And
I know. But still clever.
Yeah, it is. That's what I was saying. But it's so all they have to do is break down the satellite dish on top of this radio station, which they could just, you know, sounds like a pretty simple.
Yeah, but it's not about that. I mean, while the main sort of objective is simple, it's more about his journey. And I mean, it's quite a short film as well, an hour and a half, Justin. But but there's all that clever commentary about sort of mindless consumerism and all the rest.
When Nada finds that the church is kind of like something's going on in the church, and he finds the glasses, and yes. this is where things turn a bit, and this is where once we're already introduced to Frank, which is Keith David,
yes,
and. But he finds these glasses and he goes for a walk and he puts them on and he sees everything black and white. Again, Carpenter being so stylish, I think one of the reasons he went black and white, not for the obvious reasons, it's, you know, black and white. It's because when he puts on the glasses, it looks like something from the 50s.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, this is very much got sort of 1950s B-movie vibes about it. And obviously, Carpenter, you know, going by his other work, you know, like The Thing and stuff. Obviously, Carpenter is a big fan of this type of story. So, yeah. I mean, even the spaceships and all that you don't see whenever they have the glasses off, you know, are very 1950s-esque.
Yeah, and that's what he does throughout this entire film, is that he pretty much shows his love for the era he grew up with. Or the cinema. He's done it with The Salt and Precinct 13. He's done, obviously, The Thing, which is a remake of Thing from Another World. Escape from New York even has this kind of vibe to it.
It's like a Western, Escape from New York, it's, you know? Yeah.
I mean, everything he touches. Yeah. And Big Trouble in China is a perfect example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would say as well, whenever I was watching it for this particular time for the podcast, I was thinking Roddy Piper is basically playing Kurt Russell playing this type of role here, you know, not as good as Kurt Russell, you know, obviously,
yeah,
but it's very much, you can 100% imagine Kurt Russell in this role.
Okay, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
When he's got the glasses on and he sees the alien and we see,
yes.
we see subliminal message consume by
yeah, obey
all this stuff.
Yeah.
And the dude, the alien man, is reading the paper. Is he reading yes. a real paper, or is he seeing obey, consume?
Well, he's an alien, so maybe he's reading like the real text. I don't know, but
that's a good point, isn't it?
Because he's an alien. I think the sort of subliminal stuff is more for the humans to basically brainwash them, because they're using Earth and the humans before moving on to another planet, as it's basically said later on. So, yeah, maybe he's just actually reading the news, you know? But it's very, I like the scene where he goes into, you know, the after this, very straight after this, he's into the shops and he's seeing them all getting their hair done and stuff, and they're, it's actually quite creepy, because in the start going for him, I think that this could have been expanded upon more, this particular scene, where they go, we've got one who can see, and they all start moving towards him. It's actually very creepy.
Well,
but instead of them going for him, the police come, well, the alien police.
It's kind of the one drawback I have with it is he seems to get away quite easily.
Yeah, I mean, he fucking robs a bank and shoots people, blows the shit out of people and stuff.
But, yeah, there's really no, at this point, threat. And yeah, he's the more of the threat.
To me, if this film, and I really enjoy this film, you know, there is, being honest and being sort of like super critical, there is a lack of tension and threat at times, you know.
Oh, there's no tension or threat.
Yeah.
But what it does have, though, is just a good fucking time.
Yeah, and it has even, cool stuff.
Even at the end, it sucks when these two get it. And
I know.
So
especially Keith David for some reason.
it does its job.
It's a pretty weak death scene for Nada as well at the end.
Yeah, but I think that's the way they wanted to keep it. I really do think that's Carpenter sticking with the simplicity of certain scenes, like they would do back in the 50s.
Yeah,
the groceries. I mean, it does pick up the violence quite a bit, actually.
So oh yeah,
he peppers it. He peppers it in quite a bit. The grocery store scene is the funny. I mean, when he walks into the girl and he goes, Jesus. He goes, your head looks like it fell into the cheese dip back in 1957. And then he turns to the normal woman and he says, you're okay. This one, real fucking ugly.
That's right. You know, and then he goes, it's, you know, with the watch, he goes, I've got one that can see, you know. Or I think it's her or one of the other ones. And then that's when they start sort of moving towards him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously he like fights the cops and stuff. And, you know, whenever they come after him. But like you said, it's all a bit too easy, you know.
Well, yeah. He gets away with it a couple times because they didn't expect it coming. Then he goes into the bank and he blows the face off one of them. So it's brutal. And I think that's why it was black and white when you were seeing that shot, because otherwise it'd be pretty brutal. So I think that's why some of the violence is...
Well, it's possible. I know that Quentin Tarantino had to do it, he did it anyway, with the first Kill Bill. You know, that crazy 88 battle where it's complete, it's just a bloodbath. Well, yeah. He had for the Western world. I actually have watched the color version of it that was released in sort of the Asian market. But for the Western world version, it was filmed and it had to be put in black and white due to the. I know it's comic book violence, but it is, you know, over the top blood splatter and heads rolling, you know. So maybe it could be the same case here.
When he has to escape from all this chaos, he kidnaps Holly.
Right.
How convenient. And
oh, yeah, and she just happens to work at the TV station as well. Really convenient.
I mean, she should have sold this better. She's so bland. Now, I don't, and obviously this is Carpenter's direction, to tell her to be emotionless, because she's pretty much like a robot. So totally. I don't.
She's like an android?
What's that?
She's like an android? A robot, yeah?
Yeah, like I just said. Thank you.
Yeah, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah, but you didn't have to repeat it. Is there a fucking echo?
What? Is there an echo?
People you see?
Obey, consume. You know, don't ask questions.
Put your glasses on and fuck off. So, yeah, but that's my point. The point is that is obviously Carpenter would tell her, just do it emotionless. Okay? Because the big twist that she's involved in all this.
She's a conspirator.
But.
Yeah, but. And like a double agent too.
I see the problem I have with that is that it doesn't work for me because A, I wouldn't give a fuck if she was because I don't like her already.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, that's it. I mean.
Also, it appears she also has super strength as well because she can throw Rowdy Roddy Piper, who's built like a shit brick house and massive, and he's about twice the size of her, but she can like casually with like the flip of a hand throw him through a window.
She chucks him out the window, and then when we see him when she sees him later, she's like oh yeah, I thought I killed you, sorry about that. And he's like, yeah, we're cool. And what I don't get, the way she presents herself is so boring. It's the complete opposite.
She's a clone.
It's the complete opposite of what we get from Frank and Nada's character.
Yeah.
You know, they got such
Keith David connect again. you know, and he's lively. Whereas Roddy Piper, not the greatest actor, but he has that presence, like you say. But yeah, but also what really miffs me, I don't know, it's just a bit of a sort of plot convenience thing, but despite her being completely emotionless and trying to kill him, he falls in love with her. Love at first sight. What? You know?
Well, I don't think he did that.
We'll have to go back for Holly. You know, all this, that it's not really, you know, why?
He's a good guy.
I know. Not if you were working in the bank that day. You know?
But he only killed aliens.
Well, that is true.
No, he didn't kill. He didn't kill any humans.
I know that. I know, but it's still quite graphic.
Fuck them. They're aliens, fucking assholes. So let's talk about the famous, it was supposed to be a few seconds, fight scene. They trained for a couple weeks for.
Couple of months, I read.
And yeah, so this is weird because, well, I think only Carpenter could pull this off, maybe Tarantino. And the reason I say that, it's brutal, but it's slapsticky.
It's dragged out too much as well, I think.
It's what?
Dragged out too much.
Well, that's what I think. I think it's a little too much. But when you ask people about They Live, they say two things they love about it. I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and I'm all out of bubblegum. And the fight sequence. They love this scene. And I think it's kind of overdone.
It is overdone, and it's, well, not so much overdone, but overly long. It's too long. It goes on for ages. It's like eventually, like,
well, what do you, wait a minute, what do you think overly done means?
Well, yeah, well, yeah. Well, overly done could also mean, like, overly acted or whatever, you know? So it could mean several things, actually.
Oh, God.
But anyway.
Worst podcast ever.
Well, no, it's not, you know, but anyway. It's almost like a fucking advert for WWF as well, you know, because yeah, there's sort of slick moves in there.
Yeah, you can tell Roddy Piper helped out a bit there with some of the stunt work and all. It was fun, but I was looking at my watch, and I mean, don't get me wrong, the outcome of it works because when he makes him put on the glasses finally. And he's like, what the fuck? Them walking out the alley and they're just beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
That is funny. So maybe the payoff works for having to be so long because the payoff is funny.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it could have been edited, I think. Also, what that sort of miffed me as well is whenever, and it is funny, whenever they're walking down the street to go to the hotel together, after, you know, he finally got him to put on the glasses, and they're really badly injured, and even when they're in the hotel room, they're really, really, like, you know, beaten up and bruised and cut and all sorts. Then they just get a quick shower, and then they're, like, completely cured, fixed again, you know, well, back to normal.
But see, isn't that what makes Carpenter so good? Because he can get away with this.
Mm. No, I mean, I still enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying anything negative. Are you listening to anything that's coming out of my mouth?
I am. I'm agreeing with you. Are you listening to me?
No, you're not. You just, oh my God. Anyways, well, Carpenter can get away with it because Carpenter can, and I do think Tarantino can get away with it because it's, I don't know, there's something about it where if there's any other film, any other filmmaker, that is, and they just did a 6-minute fight scene way over the top. They're wounded and busted. We're having a good laugh with them. We're walking. They could barely stand up. And then 2 seconds later, they're like, okay, let's go fight aliens.
I think it's because with Tarantino and Carpenter, I think it's because it's almost like it's self-aware. And it's also a homage to sort of old sort of B-movies that would have done those sorts of things as well. People are, the audience, people like ourselves, are sort of in on the joke with them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, Carpenter and Tarantino can bring people in like that. Yes. Even when you got Roddy Piper as the lead, and God love him, God rest his soul, by the way, he passed not too long ago, a couple of years back. But yeah, I use the word a lot, I'm going to say it, there's charm, and it's the charm enthusiasm that makes it. Yeah, enthusiasm. It's just something about it. It puts a smile on your face.
Totally, yeah, definitely.
So when they meet Gilbert at the hotel, And he tells him about this big meeting. And then Holly shows up. I'm like, what the fuck's going on here?
There's actually a really good scene. It's quite a surprise whenever the bomb goes off and then they're attacked by the alien sort of cops.
Yeah, I have that on my notes. This is where the killing kind of goes to an art. This is the rating starts kicking in a bit because the last act of this film is all aliens get blown up and this part, the humans are getting it. And there's women getting shot in the back as they're running away, and they don't pull any punches here.
No, it basically is just the point where it turns into Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah, I saw that, especially in the alleyway.
Yes.
I saw that. It did have glimpses of that. And I do love, we got this watch, and it makes them transport. Like, no way. Yeah, but we don't know the code. So Frank and Nada are running, and they drop the watch. Oh, here's your destination. Oh, what is that? Oh, you must have set the... I mean, it's come on.
I know, but again, it's part of the sort of where it's tongue-in-cheek. Almost we're in on the joke. You know?
And then they jump to the little hole and then boom, they're the headquarters.
I absolutely love whenever they go to basically the alien airport. You know, where the people are just like being zapped off into space. You know, yeah, hang on.
Where they weren't on the top tower. Where are they looking out of? What window was that?
Who knows? You know, it don't make sense, you know what I mean? It's just They're fucking out in space now, you know. It's no longer, who knows. And I love even, you know, their former mate who's basically portrayed them. What do you call him? You know, the homeless guy. Yeah. I love how he says, where instead of explaining it, he says, it's just something to do with folded up space time or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like, again, that's a joke to say is, we're not even going to try and explain this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you
run with it.
You can get away with this, the Hollywood one-line fix, right?
Yeah.
And I love it. I love when he's just named the homeless guy, but Buck Flower, who's the one who portrays him, he's in his tux. And I love how...
He's sold out completely.
I love how there's nobody in the corridors, and these guys have got fucking... They're armed to the teeth. They walk into a formal dinner of some sort, and none of them says anything to him. And here comes Buck Flower. He's like, "Ooh, hey, guys, what's up? Are you here for the meeting?" And they're like, yeah, sure, why not?
Should dressed for the occasion, he says, something like that.
Yeah. And then they ask him, why are you doing this? And he says, it's for fame and stuff and wealth. And so wait a minute, they did say, he said something about they're treating this planet as a third world. They're just using us for the resources and then leaving?
Pretty much. So, and then he says, so why not get rich off the back of it by helping them out? He sold out completely. So, yes.
But won't they, what resources are they taking?
I believe it's, I don't even think that's fully explained, but it's something like just natural resources. And I think.
Well, die then? And what good is that going to do them?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's planning on being whisked off, you know, in Space Airport in the TV station, you know, to their planet, which again just totally reminded me of The Twilight Zone and that famous episode of The Twilight Zone, To Serve Man.
People
are going on holidays to the alien planet, but with a very dark twist, you know.
So when they start blowing shit up and.
Yeah.
And going through the corridors, blowing everyone away. Everyone's getting shot. And they got contacts on now. So,
convenient so they don't have to wear the glasses.
Well, that actually works for me. I was aware of that. And then. So they go in and they start blowing everyone away. And then he'll stop and talk to a secretary. Oh, hey, lovely. Listen, do you know how we can get to the blah, blah? And she's like, yeah, just go this way. Thank you. Obviously, he's human. That's why he's talking to her so nicely. And then he'll blow the shit out of someone else. So
yeah, like that's
the ones he's killing are the baddies.
Yep, the aliens.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. And then you'd be like, blowing everyone away. And then 2 seconds later, oh, hey, sweetie, do you know where I can get a...
He's back to being a charmer.
It's quick, but it's a cheat and it works. Again, I don't think I'd appreciate it in other films, but this one, we're going with it, right? And it's when Frank gets it. Mm-hmm. And Right. At this point, I can't remember why I fell of Holly when I first saw it. Did I figure it out or not? It's not really a big plot twist, but she just walks up behind him. It's like a really weird cut. She comes up behind
him. Cuts away.
Yeah, and it cuts away. And then she shows up on the roof without Frank, and then obviously Nada puts the pieces together. But it's a nice cheat. But it shouldn't work, but it does. Does it make any sense what I'm saying?
No, no, I know what you're saying. It's basically, I mean, yes, he's killed off screen, especially, which is a bit weird considering all the violence that we've just witnessed. So, you know, maybe the effect or whatever, you know, didn't work right and they didn't have time to shoot it again, or Keith David wasn't available or whatever. So they just, you know, made that quick edit. Who knows? But, I mean, generally, this film, there's a lot of, you could pick holes in this all day.
But I'm not picking a hole at it. That's my point.
No, I know that there.
It works for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think with this film overall, it gets away with a lot because it is so likable, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. I know, but I don't know. I think
as well. Again, come back to the. I think. We're in on the joke with Carpenter. It's a nudge and a wink and homage to sort of B movies, you know, 50s B movies and all sorts.
It's like that old saying: you're laughing with it, not at it.
100%.
But yeah, so They Live. Yeah, I have it. I revisit it once every few years.
Same here.
But it's of all by Carpenter's, it's not one of my favorites. The last couple we did was In the Mouth of Madness and just this one, and they're two. They'd probably be two, even though I love all the Carpenter stuff, period. All of
yes.
it. These two would be at the bottom, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
This would be one of my favorite Carpenters.
This would be, I just can't use Salt and Pre-Steak 13, The Thing, Halloween, Big Trouble in Little China, Escape from New York, Escape from L.A., Starman, Christine, I mean, Prince of Darkness. These are far superior films.
Yes, I know that they are far better films, and they're most definitely far better Carpenter films, you know, in terms from a technical point of view. But again, this one is just, it's just so light. It puts a smile on my face.
Yeah, you're right. And like I said, just because it's lower my Carpenter scale, scale is fucking everything's above, you know, way above water here. So it's not an insult. But you're right. At the end of the day, it's just good comic book fun.
Yeah, and the aliens look cool as fuck as well. You know, with their sort of, they look like basically zombies, because that's obviously a play on people who are sort of brainwashed by consumerism, that they're basically zombies.
I just like the fact you made him pretty much skinless.
Yeah. Oh, they're quite ghoulish looking. And it even ends on a big joke where, you know, it's basically the fella and the girl's having sex and he's an alien. He goes, and this is when we're going to all see them all. He goes, what's the matter, baby? Or something like that. There's Siskel and Ebert are in it as well, as the movie reviewers are complaining about too much violence in films by Carpenter and Romero.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, don't get me wrong, it's definitely a good time. And it's nice taking a break after talking about that just depressing downer Dead Man's Shoes, as good as it was.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. So,
in terms of tone, this is like a world away.
Yeah. So next up, we're going to be going back to the gritty crime with The Long Good Friday with Bob Hoskins and the very young Helen Mirren. And so join us for that one. And the new issue of Phantasmagoria is out now. It's available on Amazon worldwide and, of course, locally here in Forbidden Planet and other stores within the U.S.
Yep.
You could give us a shout here, CitizenFrame_podcast on Instagram and, of course, Facebook. Give us a shout. They Live was a recommendation a few times by a couple of different people. And so we do honor most requests if they come through, and we'll certainly try to tackle them in a quick and timely manner.
We will indeed.
As long as we don't fuck up the recording.
Again.
And Trevor doesn't echo me. I opened the window on that one. I opened the window on that one. All right, guys, listen, take care of yourselves. We'll chat soon. Later.